Les colloques du Collège de France.
Okay, so as I say, it's always a bit impressive for me to give talk in front of all my friends. And, you know, I give a lot of talks, but this is the most difficult talk for me to give, so hopefully I don't mess up. So I'm going to try to relate what we do in my lab with the notion of times in development, and actually even borrow the slide from Thomas, not System 1, and to try to explain what we try to mean by that. Okay? Okay, so we try to work on the neural diversity, try to understand how the many neurons that compose our brain are being formed. And those cells come in very many different varieties. So if you want to study that in human, it's a bit complicated because, you know, we have 80 billion neurons in our brain, and we have no idea how many cell types there are. In fact, there are even people who believe there is no real cell type. It's a continuum from one cell type to the other one. And in spite of many, many studies from, for example, the Allen Institute in Seattle, which had done a lot of sequencing on all the brains, we still don't know whether we have 100 cell type, 1,000 cell type, or 100,000 cell type. I will myself believe, according to what we see in flies, that is more closer to 100,000 cell types. Okay? So we study instead a much simpler organism, which is the fruit flies, and not even the fruit flies, mostly the optic lobe, that means the part of the fly brain that actually process vision. And the fly is a very, very visual animal, which is most of his brain actually is dedicated to vision. More than two-thirds of the neurons in the brain are just for vision. And we have identified, we and other people have identified at least 250 neuron types which are only present in that, and they are very well-defined cell types, not any kind of continuum whatsoever. And on top of that, we know the connectome of those neurons, in the sense that we know what each one of those neurons connects to what other neuron in a very precise detail, thanks to the work from Janelia Farm. And in spite of this fact that there's only 60,000 neurons, which is a million times more simple than a human brain, they can do things that we cannot do. Flying, high speed, acrobatic flying, and again, you cannot catch a fly if you try it, okay? And so now we have actually, of course, many, many different tools which are available in flies, the genetic tool for the last 100 years. And of course, now we have also access to single-cell genetics, although every other species, including the hippo, actually can, or the rhino, can actually do a single-cell sequencing. Okay? So let me give you some introduction in terms of how the system functions. So I'm trying to use this new pointer. So what you have basically is the retina here, okay? And maybe it's easier if I point. So retina is about 800 type of photoreceptor, which means the system is very low resolution, about 800 pixels. And then what you have processing by different layers, different neural pills, okay, whereby those 800, those 800 pixels are going to be processed by 800 columns in many different layers. This is called the lamina, which mostly process vision. And then you're going to go deeper into the brain, into the medulla, which I'm going to spend most of my time, which process vision in every sense, color vision, motion vision, object detection, whatever, okay? And then this is going to be processed by higher processing center, very interesting stuff, but we will not have time to talk about this today, okay? So what you have a beautiful retinal organization, which means that we have what we call retinotopy, which means that the photoreceptor here are going to project to here, the photoreceptor here are going to project here, which means you have, in fact, not one optic lobe, you have 800 processing systems running in parallel to one another. And this makes our life dramatically more simple. And on top of that, what I'm going to try to argue, and maybe try to put some qualifier at the end, that actually the system is designed in a very deterministic manner, which means that everything is planned in the genome. There is no such thing like, you know, activity dependent or plasticity. Everything is really well set up in rock from the beginning. Every fry is the same. Okay? So there is a large number of cell types. So a few cell types, mostly photoreceptor in the eye. This very simple structure, the lamina, very interesting, but very simple, only basically detecting, you know, on-off motions. And most of the activity is actually on the medulla, where there are at least 100 cell types. And what I'll tell you today is how time is very important for processing those 100 cell types before the information is being sent to higher processing center and to the brain, and this leads to a behavior. Okay? So in this system here, what you have different types of neurons. So if we're focusing this attention here, you have different types of neurons. You have neurons that process information from one pixel, and for example, what is called a unicolumnar neuron. There is one neuron like that for every one of the pixels. Okay, and so here I try to illustrate that there is about 800 neurons because there are 800 columns. And then you have neurons which are much broader, collect information from neighboring or matidia, or neighboring pixels, and are going to process information. There are going to be many fewer. And actually, in this case, you know, you have 75 neurons belonging to that, but you have some other processing neurons. There are five of them, the whole brain, and some you have 800 in the whole brain. So a lot of different stoichiometry. So the unicolumnar are produced at one-to-one stoichiometry with a number of colons, and those multicolumnar neurons are produced at much lower stoichiometry, which differ from one neuron to the other one. Okay, so now through a lot of genetics over the last many years, we know actually most of those neurons purely based on morphology. This starts with Cajal. Cajal basically looked at the fly, not this fly, but other flies, to basically define all those cell types, and you can really define precisely all the cell types purely based on morphology. With at least one more caveat there, exactly, you can say that you never have more than one neuron per colon, which means if you have two neurons, they look a bit the same. In the same colon, it's likely to be two different neurons, but if you have... So basically, the maximum will be one neuron per colon. So everything is processed in parallel to each other. And so, of course, you have projection neurons that send information to the higher brain center, or you have local interneurons which process information, whatever process means. But more interesting for us, you have to distinguish between those unicolumnar neurons, which are one per colon, and those which are multicolumnar, which have one per 5 or 10 or 100 or 200 or per colon. Okay? So how do you make all those neurons and very precise number in the right number with the right stoichiometry? And I hopefully will give you some answer by the end of the talk. Okay? So again, we knew those neurons from a morphological point of view, and of course when single cell sequencing came out, and luckily we got lucky, our department hired Ralu Satija, who is the king of single cell sequencing with SORAT, so we moved very quickly to using single cell sequencing. And actually a very nice TSNE here, when he shows all those neurons, it's not only the medulla, it's that all the neurons in the optic lobe, okay? But 250 neurons, about 250 clusters. And you can see, if you compare to most of the single cells you might have seen from vertebrates, they're very, very well determined, very cluster, big blobs separated from the other, okay? And also, you can see the size of those clusters varies quite extensively, which makes sense because I told you, you have the unicolumnar neuron, which are present one for each cluster, and those are going to be the big clusters. And then so, which has the multicolumnar neuron, which are present one for five, and they're going to be very different size cluster. And therefore, we can put a name, not all, but many of those clusters. And we have been working very hard to try to put a name to connect the morphology with the transcriptome, and hopefully at some point be able to use this information to try to understand how the connectome can be built. If you know how 250 neurons connect to each other, and you have all the transcriptome, you can be able to figure it out. So far, we haven't managed to do that. You might see here, there is, for example, here a cluster which is much larger. Usually, in most of the single cell clusters, which are much larger, like that is crap. Here is not crap, it's actually eight neurons, which are very, very similar type of neurons. So, eight neurons that detect motion. Four of them detect front to back, back to front, up and down. The other one detects the same thing, but either on a white background, black strap on a white background, or vice versa. So, very well defined neuron. And now we have actually means to differentiate those things. Okay, so. Now we have all this transcriptome, and it's very nice, but this is adult transcriptome, and I'm a developmental biologist, so I don't care about what's happening in the adult. I care much more how the neuron come to be about. Okay? So we decided to try to look during development. And of course, during development, the neurons have no shape or form, so it's very hard to match the shape of a neuron with this transcriptome because we don't know what the shape is. But then we say, okay, let's try to get the adult transcriptome and then try to look earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier. And every time, try to divide the screen to identify the neurons just a bit earlier in time to those in the adult and so on and so on. And it works beautifully well. So what you have here, again, those 250 clusters that you have in the adult, okay? And then you can see those at 70% of development, and you can match perfectly one-to-one all those clusters to the other. And then you can do the same thing at 50% development all the way to the time where basically they were just born. And therefore, what we have now was a developmental trajectory of all the neurons from the time where they are born to the time where they become adult. And there was a lot of interesting features you can see that. And just to notice, you remember this big blob here, which is eight neurons. You can see those eight neurons get very well separated at the time of development because although they do the same thing, they detect motion in one direction. The connectome, the way they connect to each other are going to be different, and therefore you can see it during the earlier development. Okay, this is very nice. And you can see here, you can start at this point to see this long trajectory in the sense you can see the neurons which are maturing. And so the question is, where does it start? How do those neurons become different from one another? How do you generate all of those type of neurons? Okay. So Okay, so let's focus now mostly on the medulla part of the optic lobe. And again, you have 800 colons, and you have, again, those neurons that form here. And basically what we can say is that actually each one of the colons is going to be a neural network on its own. We want to understand how all those neurons that surround one of the colon is done. And we can do that because 800 times repeated throughout development. Okay? So, and this structure is about 100 neurons. About 25 of them are unicolumnar, which means that, you know, one per colon, and the rest are different stoichiometry between a multicolumnar neuron. Okay? Okay, so how does this happen? As you might know, the eyes of the fly develop. It's a beautiful work from Jerry Rubin many, many years ago, where basically it shows that the eye develops, and many other people actually, through a wave of differentiation that cross through this epithelium, a single-cell neuroepithelium, and create the 800 omatidia, the 800 type of photoreceptor that forms the eye. And then this sends their projection, and they are going to meet this purple here neuroepithelium. This neuroepithelium crescent shape is going to give rise to all those neurons from the medulla. This is a lamina, the other five structure, which is very interesting stuff, but I don't have time to talk about. And we can focus our attention on this neuroepithelium. So first is a neuroepithelium, and then what's going to happen, that neuroepithelium on the outer edge will become neurostem cells, and we call neurostem cells neuroblasts in flight. Okay, so it'll be confusing. And what's going to happen, those neuroblasts are going to form right at the outer edge of the neuroepithelium, and then over a period of 3 days, this neuroepithelium will be transformed. That means the neuroblasts will grow, will develop, and at the end, the whole neuroepithelium will be consumed by a number of neuroblasts. Okay, so in a diagrammatic fashion, you have the neuroepithelium here, an outer at the outer edge of the of the neuroepithelium, you have this neuroblast, and then as time goes, every maybe 2-3 hours, you have a new row of neurostem cells or neuroblasts that form, and so on and so on. And at the end, we thought for a longest time, in fact, this was producing 800 neuroblasts. It was great because, you know, 800 neuroblasts will be the number of colons, which means very easy. This means that each neuroblast produces all the neurons for each one of the colons. Okay? It's a bit problematic, and I will tell you later on, maybe this number is not totally correct, but, you know, this is a very basic concept. Each neuroblast produces all the neurons that makes some of the colons. Okay? So, in fact, we're going to see that there is many more neuroblasts, and we have to slightly change our model at the end, but it's another story. Okay? Okay. So if you make a cross-section through that, and this is true, whatever, you get the neuroepithelium here, and then the cell at the outer edge becomes a neuroblast, and neuroblast is a stem cell that does what stem cells do. They divide. They give rise to one intermediate precursor cell. They divide once more, called a GMC, produce two neurons, one neuron which is notch on, one neuron which is notch off. Okay? And then 2 hours later, the next cell will become a neuroblast, produce the GMCs, and divide. But this one also keeps dividing as well. And so very quickly, what you're going to have, a beautiful organized system whereby the whole neuroblast, the whole neuropathy will be consumed by neuroblasts. And at one given point, you're going to have, you know, those long colons of young neuroblasts that just got born, and these old neuroblasts that were born some time ago, and they have produced neurons a long time ago. And this neuron here was produced when the neuroblast was young, the same way as this neuron was produced when this neuroblast was young. Okay, and so this is very well organized, and it keeps very beautiful structure. If you make a clone here, when you label one neuroblast, you can see this long colon of about 20 neurons that form here that correspond to the product of one of the stem cells. Okay, so now the question is, if my proposal is right, these neuroblasts produce 20 cells that are all going to be different from one another to be able to produce all the neurons that surround each one of the colon. How can you, one stem cell can produce 20 different type of neurons? Okay? And so we didn't know anything about that until about 25 years ago, my colleague Chris Doe and Odenwald have come out with a very nice model, what they call the temporal patterning of neuron stem cell. Very simple. The neuron express hunchback, the gene that Thomas talked about for earlier, his earlier life in the embryo. And hunchback is a transcription factor. When the cell divides and produces a neuron, it's going to produce a neuron that expresses hunchback. But then it gets tired of expressing hunchback. It's going to turn off hunchback and turn on cripple. When it divides, it produces a neuron that is cripple. And then it gets tired of cripple, PDM, gets tired of PM, produce castor. So conceptually, it's beautiful because now you have one stem cell that can produce four different types of neurons simply by this transcriptional circuit, or by hunchback, then cripple, then PDM, then castor. Okay? It's very nice. And actually, 25 years ago, people jumped on that, said, let's find the same thing in all the structures that we know develop in a temporal manner in vertebrate, for example, the mouse retina or the human cortex. They're all forming in this temporal cell. And so people look for those genes. Nobody found anything similar to that. Michel Caillouet in the Mars retina found something, a bit, some hint of some of the conservation, but it's not exactly the same story. Okay. And so we say we have a nice system, and you know we are a bit lucky. We are seeing flies, and therefore you can imagine that what you have here, in what I just described, that you have young neuroblasts and old neuroblasts in one snapshot. You can do that because they develop in time. And so we should be able to say, you know, hunchback, crippled, PDM, castor. None of those was expressed there. Okay, a bit disappointing, but we find much better because we find the same thing except the name of the gene change, and we have quite a few more. Okay, so now that we have young neuroblasts expressed homothorax, then homeobrain and ILS to repair Dachy, teles, and now you start being able to produce, to have a long temporal series where you can start producing quite a bunch of neurons. Okay. And so the question is that, you know, and you have an illustration here, what's happened here is that the neuroepithelium, these are the young neuroblasts that's migrating, this is the neuroepithelium, these are the young neuroblasts, they express the young, the first transcription factor homothorax, the ILS, and these are the old neuroblasts, they express DACIT, and if I have enough color on my microscope, I will show you the next temporal window. So you can see here very nicely that in one snapshot, you can see all these temporal windows. And of course, those are young, but those young are also going to be old one day. Okay, so anyway. So how does this system function? Okay, this is still a very simple system. You know, I'm going to give you a few more of the transcription factor. The rule is very simple. If you have the gene stopy paired, for example, if you remove stopy paired, the temporal series, the division will keep going, but all the neurons will be stuck into the previous temporal series. It will be stuck into the ILS temporal window. Which means what happens is likely that the gene X, stopy paired, activates the next one, DACIT, and repress the previous one, ILS. So again, as Thomas was mentioning, this seems to be a purely transcription network, which means is you know just a few transcription factors acting with each other and try to basically have some sort of a timing which depends simply on the time it takes for this transcription network to progress. Okay, and you know. And for the longest time, we believe actually this timing, which takes a bit, you know, by the time you do transcription, translation, and then you repress, it might take maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours, which is about the time of the cell cycle. So we thought for the longest time that cell cycle was coordinated with that, which means every neuroblast will go through each one of those temporal series and will produce a neuron which is different at each temporal. But this is only 5 neurons, and we need to produce at least 20, so how can we go from 5 to 20 using the same basic principle, okay? So those neuroblasts are producing neurons. Actually, this actually just below the neuroblast, it's actually staining, which is basically the neurons which are produced by those neuroblasts. And I showed you this picture just to compare very closely with what happened in the human or the mouse cortex. But in the mouse cortex, what you have, you know, the radial glia here at the base are forming layer 6 and layer 5, 4, 3, 2 in the correct order, meaning the first 6 and 5 and 4 and 3. And Simone Penmeyer and Songhai Shi has shown beautifully well through this Madame clone that indeed a single radial glia produced a neuron in layer 6, one layer 5, 4, 3, 2, which means the same neural stem cell as in our case, produce those different types of layers. Again, a lot more complexity exists here because there's not one type of neuron in layer 5, and mostly there are a bunch of them. We might not address this question right now today, okay? So a lot of similarity between this picture that I showed you before and this picture here, whereby a single neural stem cell can produce multiple types of neurons. Here is an only 5, but we can actually try to do better in the food file, okay? Okay, so now if you look at this picture that I showed you, it's a beautiful picture. But, you know, there is still some gaps. There is some black neuron where there is nothing in it, which means most likely we failed to identify the transcription factor was expressed there. And indeed, this was just done from ad hoc, you know, finding what we have in a freezer and having a good note saying this transcription factor antibody should work. So obviously we are missing some transcription factor and we cannot ignore that. So how can we identify in a systematic manner all the transcription factor which are going to be expressed into those cells here, okay? So Nikos, who is now actually a professor at the Institut Jacques Monod in Paris, tried to do the single cell sequencing, but not in the adult, at the time of development when all those neurons are being born. Okay? And so it's not as nice as we had before, but like you can see, this contains a lot of information. So what you can see first is actually there are some neuroblasts, so you can identify the neuroblasts, which are here. I'm going to focus my attention on that. Then you have these intermediate precursor cells, those are basically dividing once more. And then you have this long trajectory, what are the neurons, and the neurons are going to be developing because they're just forming, they're just differentiating. And if you now match this to what we had later on in development when the neurons are mature, you can see they basically along at the end of each trajectory, you can find the mature neuron here. So basically what we have here, from the time the neuron is born from the neuroblast all the way to the time is mature and being able to function, you can follow the trajectory and know exactly what is exactly the transcriptome changes this way. Okay? But let's forget about that and only focus on the neural stem cell, the neuroblasts which are here. And you can see already from here, this is actually quite some structure already in terms of the human. And actually, I found this picture here, and so the two pictures are the same one with different, you know, quite amazing because it's actually a UMAP, okay, which means totally computer-generated stuff, and each one is totally artificial, and to me this resembles exactly what you see here. What you have here is that, you know, you can see that you can see the different neuroblasts, some express homothorax and ILS, stobipaired, dacid, talus, exact same way as you see here, homothorax, ILS, stobipaired, dacid, talus. That means, you know, the computer gives us back exactly what you have, what you expected from that. But on top of that, it tells you, it's going to be able to tell you what's happening in those black neuroblasts here, so they don't have any transcription factor expressed. And so basically, what Nikos did, he just built, you know, a series, a pseudo time, when you can see genes that go up and down, up and down, up and down. And you can have the wrong series of those genes here that follow exactly the rules that this thing. And then we test all of those genes. So those genes do act as expected. For the most part, gene X activate gene plus X plus 1 and repress gene X minus 1. Okay? So now we can organize them into a temporal series whereby all these rules, they are a bit more complicated than simply gene X activate gene X plus 1 and minus repress minus 1. But, you know, overall, it's a very long structure which allows you to see that you can now define quite a number of neurons that you want to define. Because, you know, if indeed gene X activate gene X plus 1 and repress gene X minus 1, that means those three genes, X, X plus 1, X minus 1, do overlap at some point with each other. And you can see here in a picture just with the four genes I first started with, you can see here you have homothorax, homothorax plus ILS, ILS alone, ILS plus stobipaired alone, dacid. And again, added another six or seven other genes into this series, which means you can now see how many combinations of not one transcription factor, but multiple transcription factors are going to be able to specify multiple temporal windows. And so it's actually a minimum of temporal windows that we can detect simply by immunostainings. You can see like a dozen temporal windows that allow you to basically define at least 12 neurons. I'm a bit short from the 100 I want to define, so how do I go from 12 to quite a lot more? So first thing which is fairly easy is actually, as I told you, those neuroblasts, when they divide, they give rise to an intermediate precursor, what they call a GMC. They divide once more to give rise to two neurons, one notch on and one notch off, which means it's not 12 temporal windows that you have. You have 12 temporal windows indeed, but you produce 24 neurons because there is one for each neuron notch on and notch off. Okay. Okay, this is actually a picture that I showed from Thomas, because what you have here, exactly, you know, again, we have a transcription control here, and here, you know, he was trying to contrast the fact, you know, the transcription control is a different timing than the overall developmental stage. But in this case here, in our case, you know, this takes about an hour, 2 hours, and basically the time at which those neurons are being formed to each other, okay? So try to see indeed that now time is really coordinated with the development and is basically part of development, okay? Okay, so now, we produce 24 cell types. Again, it's short from 100 cell types. How can we solve this issue? Actually, the solution came when we look at the neuroepithelium. So neuroepithelial form, and I told you that all the neuroepithelium form neuroblasts, they all go through the same temporal series, and it's true. However, the neuroepithelial cells are not all the same. This is a crescent-shaped neuroepithelium, and the center is labeled by VSX, then the middle is by optics, the tip by RX, and actually, we can even define the dorsal part, so this is the dorsal part and the ventral part, labeled by two different transcription factors, which means you can at least define, in this case, six special domains where neuroblasts are going to emerge from, and are all going to undergo the very same temporal series from the different domain of expression. But in fact, although they undergo the very same temporal series, they don't produce the same type of neurons. Depending on where they come from, they're going to produce two neurons, one notch on neuron, which for the most part, not an absolute value, but for the most part, becomes independent of where they come from. That means they don't care. They're going to produce a unique columnar neurons, okay? 800 of them, because all neuroblasts will produce a neuron stem cells, a neuron that is everywhere. But those coming from here, from the dorsal VSX, will produce some other neurons which are not off. And therefore, now you can multiply everything by 6. So 12 multiplied by 2, 24 multiplied by 6, and now you have enough neurons that you can produce to explain all the production of all those neurons I find. Okay? So, and again, I can show you some illustration to show that here is actually just one temporal window, the earlier temporal window. This temporal window produces a unique columnar neuron called MI1, you know, unique columnar neuron, very same. And it's produced by all the neuroblasts throughout the neuroepithelium. But the VSX domain produces a multicolumnular, much larger receptor field only from this domain, which means it produces at lower amount, lower numbers, because you know it's only coming from a small domain. It still innervates the whole visual field, but it's only produced from a small domain in a smaller quantity. And therefore, depending on the size of the domain where they come from, they're going to produce different neurons at different stoichiometry. Okay? And actually, here is a compilation of some of the variety of neurons. You can see the different domain where they come from, and it tells you that basically it roughly corresponds to the number of neurons that are being produced, basically set up the stoichiometry. So now, what I just told you here is that basically one neuroblast produces two types of neurons. Those are unicolumnar, and they don't care where they come from. Those are multicolumnar, they care where they come from, depending on which spatial domain they are from. And this would work very well if indeed you have 800 neuroblasts. But then we went back to the bench, and we have actually a picture here where you have the neuroepithelium in neuron development, and you can see here you have the neuroepithelium with the small, tiny cells, and then a big neuroblast that forms on the outside, and basically this progress that way. That means at some point the whole neuroepithelium will be transformed into a neurostem cell. And we start counting that, we find that there is a lot more tetrahedral neuroblasts, a lot more, maybe 2,000 neuroblasts. So this doesn't fit anymore with my model. And so we say, what's going on, Claude? Are you wrong or whatsoever? So we say, let's try to see what's going on. And so again, neuroblasts, more neuroblasts than you have colon cells. So it means that not all neuroblasts can produce all of the stems of the cells. We could imagine it would be producing cells and then the cell die. But we don't have enough cell deaths that you cannot help explaining that. So we came up with a model which is actually slightly different, modified version of what I told you. Same, you know, series of temporal window. And this temporal window is going to tick based purely on the transcription network. Okay? And like Mickey decided, you know, you can actually figure out that you can extend or shorten the length of the temporal window simply by changing the properties of activation of repression. That means some temporal will be very short, some will be very long, depending how the circuit functions, how fast the repression occurs, how stable the protein is. Okay, so you have long temporal window, you have short temporal windows, and that means it's going to tick, 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 independently from anything, just independent, depending on the transcription network. But then on top of that, you're going to have cell cycle. And cell cycle only depends on totally different criteria. Simply, the cell divides, it loses one third of its weight because the cell is produced, and then you have to regrow again before it can divide again, second time. And this is going to depend. And if the cell, since the net cell are not synchronous, sometimes the cell cycle can be slower than the ticking of the temporal clock, which means sometimes your cell cycle here, you produce this neuron, this neuron, this neuron, this neuron. But another neuroblast, you will take this one, you produce a different type of neuron, and sometimes you produce another type of neuron. Which means now you can explain why you can have more than 800 neuroblasts. You have 2,000 neuroblasts, because not all of them are going to produce all of the neurons. It will simply depend on this stochastic event, whereby you lack the synchronization between cell cycle and temporal window, and therefore you can produce quite a large number of neurons in different stoichiometry simply by changing the length of the temporal window, which means when the chance that the cell cycle will hit. So we are very excited to try to take this model and try to figure out what's happened there. Okay. So this is very nice. You know, we seem to have a very deep understanding of what's going on there. I think it's quite unique in terms, you know, because again, the idea is that everything is really set up in rock. And I mean, there is maybe this stochastic version here, but it's just a small tweak on the system. And so the question is, you know, how does the system evolve? And how can you evolve the system, for example, to adapt the environment, the animal to the environment? And this is actually the work that Nikos Konstantinides is doing at Institut Jacques Monod to try to figure out how the system evolved. But to some extent, I do believe there is a lot of conservation of the system. For example, Musca, the house flies, which diverge from Drosophila about 80 million, 100 million years ago, it has a very, very similar type of system, very, very similar. You know, it seems that, you know, evolution has obtained the pinnacle of development. You cannot do much better than that, okay, with the systems that you have. So with that, we try to see what can we look in evolution to see whether we can find things that vary quite a lot more than this optic law, because, you know, flying high speed takes a lot of energy and a lot of very sophisticated system, and therefore maybe it's not going to evolve fast enough. So we focus our attention on a different structure in the brain of the flies, which is also a very important structure. It's called the mushroom body. And the mushroom body is a much simpler structure than the optic lobe. It's only composed of 7 cell types, and again, it's basically where memory and learning is occurring. So it's a fairly important structure. And we know quite a bit about that. And something very interesting is that it's composed of 2,000 neurons, But those 2,000 neurons come only from four neuroblasts. If you divide 2,000 by four, that means each neuroblast produces 500 neurons. One stem cell produces 500 neurons, okay? Which means it undergoes, because there is still a notch division, that means it has to undergo 250 divisions. Even a division takes an hour, you make 250 hours. This is longer than the life of the larval life of an embryo, of a fly embryo. So that means the system is working. Yes. So the question, we know how the system functions. So neuroblasts produce first a gamma 1 cell types. It divides 85 divisions to produce some gamma 1 and some gamma 2. Then it's going to produce 40 divisions for alpha prime, beta prime 1, alpha prime, beta 2. And then for 125 divisions, it's going to produce the last three cell types. So now we produce 125 cell types to 250 divisions. Okay? Now, how does the system evolve? So for totally different reason, because we're interested in aging, we also have in a lab, a zoo, not a rhino, but we have actually ants in the lab, okay? And so the ants are very smart animals, they're social animals, and they are going to, as compared to the flies, have about the same size brain, but they rely a lot more on olfaction, which is what the mushroom body is for. Because you know they communicate with each other in the dark through pheromone, and therefore they have an amazing olfactory system here. Okay, and as a consequence of that, in that case, it's a quote from Charles Darwin. So the people who work on human, you know, take note of that. Okay, Darwin knew what he was talking about. Okay. So the mushroom body of the fly of the ant is much much larger. It contains 100,000 neurons instead of 2,000 in flies, and it represents 30% of the brain of an ant as compared to the brain of a flies. Again, ants are much smarter and they do a lot of social stuff, which means it's very important. So this is actually a single cell sequencing of the fly mushroom body, and you can see the seven cell types I described, the two gamma, the two alpha prime beta prime, the three alpha beta. Okay. So we can distinguish them very well in the flies. And so although we cannot do too much in ants because it's a difficult system to work with, we can do single cell sequencing. And so here it is the whole brain of an ant. And you can see through markers, it's actually the mushroom body cells here. And now what you can do, take those subsets of cells and actually to do some single cell sequencing on that. And now we find something quite different, because instead of the seven cell type we find in the flies, we find a 16 cell type, but we can have the two gamma, the two alpha prime, beta prime, but a much longer series of alpha, beta in the ant. So we say, what's going on there? How come the ant has so many cell types? And still, it contains the earlier cell types, but it has expanded much larger, much longer, the later cell type. And so we say, what's going on there? So we did at least some, we can do in situ, and so we can try to see which cells are produced first and which are produced last. And actually, in this here, we can see that indeed the early born, then middle born, and then even in this temporal series here, you can see that born earlier than those series here, okay? So in fact, what we can see is that at least there is a series whereby, you know, the early neurons are born here, and then the late neurons are born here. And so what it means, in fact, that for some reason, the temporal series in ants continue much longer than the temporal series in fruit flies. And the reason for that, you remember, the fruit flies had to make 250 divisions in 10 days. There is no time to make another more cell division. Ants take much longer. They take a month to develop, and therefore they have a lot more time to be able to develop. And as a consequence, we believe that the way the lineage expansion occurs, the way you create more neurons before the neuron gets killed, it could be that, you know, you can intercalate some step in between. It doesn't have to be the case. It could be that you have multiple neuroblasts that produce different types of neurons. Instead, it seems that actually the same neuroblast stays there, but it stays alive much longer and then keep producing a temporal series which was most likely hidden in the flies, and now it's being revealed because the time of development is expanded. So of course we're doing an experiment which hopefully might work, is not sure it will work, basically to prevent the neuroblasts from dying in fruit flies, to see whether you can expand the lineage and see basically a mushroom body from ants developing in the context of the fruit flies. Anyway, so these are fun, you know, we love our little ants, and so I want to give credit to the people who have done the lab. What's going on? I didn't intend to talk about that, so. Okay, so these are Nikos and Isabel, who are going to be both in Paris very soon. Nikos is in Paris already. This is Nechette, who is taking a position at the in Kansas City, and then at the Stowers. And then Felix, actually in Paris, is also going to join Nikos' lab, so my lab is being duplicated in Paris. And then Bogdan is my ant person, who is an amazing guy who is actually doing all the work on the drone. Thank you very much. And actually, this ant project is done in collaboration with Daniel Randberg, who is a Mr. Epigenetics, and actually, there's been a very prolific collaboration with him. Okay? These are the people who basically I didn't talk about. Okay? Thank you.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.